Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Apologies in advance for what is a very nasally delivery. I have a cold despite the heat index being 110 degrees over the past 5 days, but I digress. Rex, you were in the Delta Sky Lounge. We will get to that in just a moment. Davis Thompson, Go Dogs, is a winner on the PGA Tour, rolling to a four-shot victory at the John Deere Classic on the strength of a Sunday 64. Rex, in the aftermath, fellow Bulldog Brendan Todd, damn good dog, says that Davis Thompson is a perennial Ryder Cupper and future major winner. Ian Baker Finch on the CBS telecast compared him repeatedly to Scottie Scheffler. What say you? Is this a rising star?
He is a rising star. That all seemed a little breathless to me, to be honest with you, based on his record, because we haven't seen this until the last 2 or 3 weeks, to be honest with you. So I don't think we need to get ahead of ourselves. What he did on Sunday at the John Deere was very impressive. One bogey over the course of that final round, you could tell he was really nervous. You could tell he was dealing with a lot of things. I sent you a text message, and I assumed you were going to do a screenshot and put it up on the podcast, because I capitulate. I have agreed that, okay, he can smile. We saw it. We now have a picture of it. There he goes. He's fishing for it now. He will smile. It just did not look like he enjoyed himself. But again, this goes back to the idea. And there it is. I apologize for the audio audience, but that is Davis Thompson's best smile.
Did he know that the picture was going to be taken? Like, it's usually like a 1, 2, 3 cheese type situation. I'd never seen his teeth before. I didn't know that he was capable of such emotion, at least such joy.
I assume you watched the interview with Amanda afterwards on CBS, because I was really curious to see what the emotions were going to be like. And there were actually a surprising amount of emotions coming out of him. His wife was there. The idea that he was crying almost. He was fighting back tears.
See, he's Scottie Scheffler, Rex. He's Scottie Scheffler. He loves his wife.
Is he? Is that the line we're going to draw right there? I feel like that's a lot. And I thought about this on the plane. I'm in Atlanta, as you pointed out. I'm in the Sky Lounge. I thought about this on the flight up here, because his father is Todd Thompson, and he's the tournament director at the RSM Classic, and he is a legend of Georgia Junior Golf, and he's a legend now in St. Simon's Island. That's my fifth major. We've all acknowledged that. So I was rooting for him. I wanted him to get that first victory. I wanted him to get that breakthrough. However, there's no denying the fact, anyone that watched that final round, I'm going to go back to the line I used last week on last Sunday's podcast, that if you didn't know anything about golf and you just tuned in and you just wanted to see, oh, what's this all about? You would have thought he was being held against his will. And again, using the same line I used last week, but he did not look like he was enjoying himself.
He certainly didn't, even though he made, what, 7 birdies in his first 11 holes on Sunday, basically snuffed any and all drama out of the proceedings at TPC Deer Run. I do want to give Rex IBF the benefit of the doubt here with these Davis Thompson, Scottie Scheffler comparisons, because on the surface, they seem wildly unrealistic, if not total lunacy. I sort of see where he's coming from in the sense that DT does have and has amassed a impressive resume over his career. He's the former number one ranked amateur in the world coming out of Georgia. He had, I think, 3 college wins. He was on a U.S. Walker Cup team. He's got his card through the Korn Ferry Tour, where he played well during his apprenticeship there. He's 6'4". He kind of has that prototypical golfer build that's modern now. He's soft-spoken. And I think what he was trying to say, IBF, was trying to say is that Davis Thompson now, in what is a year and a half, almost 2 years on the PGA Tour, has 3 runner-up finishes, and he's kind of been knocking on the door, and this can be, quote-unquote, the first of many. Except the problem with that is that Davis Thompson has just 6 top 10 finishes and what is 60-something career starts. If you compare that to Scottie Scheffler and what Scottie Scheffler did over the same span, Scottie Scheffler had a 61% top 10 rate in his first couple of seasons on the PGA Tour. He has always been this relentless, this inevitable, this mind-numbingly consistent player. So I don't quite see the comparison there. I do think that Davis Thompson can have and will have a very nice career. He's already a top 15 player statistically on the PGA Tour.
Absolutely.
I think he's shown with sort of the head-to-head battle last year with John Rahm, in which he came up one shot shy. He was also a runner-up earlier this year at Myrtle Beach, opposite field event, and even last week in Detroit, where he didn't really have a chance to win and finished one shot shy there in the Motor City as well. Like, he can put himself in contention. He's on a bit of a nice run here, but please, comparing him to Scotty Scheffler at this point just is not doing anyone any favors.
Well, and it might have been it. Look, in Ian Baker Finch's defense, or anyone at CBS or even Golf Channel, you're trying to sell these events. And I did want to have a brief conversation about the idea that John Deere Classic, this event, is used as sort of the prototype of every time we're having a conversation about the future of the PGA Tour. And okay, if we have elevated events and we have majors, what else is left? What else is there really going to be on the vine for fans, for players to participate in? And this is always used as the example. What happens to the John Deere Classics of the world? And I have a tremendous amount of respect for this event. I've been to Silvis a couple of times. It's the biggest sporting event in that town. It's really, really special to them. And this week was equally special. And so I understand why CBS and everyone else is going to try to sell this a little bit more than probably they should. You're right. He is a really, really good player. He has a huge future ahead of him. The way he putted certainly this week and last week is encouraging, because if he can find a way to harness some of that going forward, I think he could be, I'm not going to say Scotty Scheffler-esque, but let's go Xander Schauffele, like whatever comparison you want to make on that front. He could be have a wonderful career, and I think he is going to have a wonderful career, but no, he's not Scotty Scheffler. I don't know about perennial Ryder Cupper. I don't know. And again, you're the Georgia Bulldog homer here, so you're the one that's going to get breathless more than any of us. And the fact that you're dialing everyone down is probably the voice of reason on this, if I want to admit it.
I don't think, if I were to get a little breathless for just a moment, I don't think the U.S. President's Cup team this year is totally an outrageous scenario. The standings have not yet updated. Davis Thompson entering the John Deere Classic was 30th in the point standings. I would largely think, based on some quick math here, that he would at least crash the top 20 since May. He has the runner-up finish in Myrtle Beach, again, an opposite field event on the PGA Tour, but a top 10 at the U.S. Open. Runner-up last week in Detroit, now a victory. He's going to be playing the Scottish. He's going to be playing the Open Championship. If he can continue this sort of form, I think he's exactly the sort of player that Jim Furyk would want to sort of fill out that back-end roster, sort of bet on the future, get him into the mix, make sure everyone knows him, try to get him adjusted to that, to if you know he's needed for Bethpage Black in 2025, he's ready to go with that requisite experience. I don't know, Rex, since you were traveling, how much you dug into this other storyline that emerged on Sunday from the John Deere Classic, but the young guns, Luke Clanton and Michael Thorbjornsson, both tied for second. Clanton becomes the first amateur to record back-to-back top 10 finishes on the PGA Tour since 1958. Meanwhile, Thor, who is making just his third career pro start, he was number one in the PGA Tour University rankings for the top graduating senior, ties for second as well. It's clear now, Rex, that these kids are coming, and they're coming quite fast. Are we becoming numb, though, to these achievements of these young kids coming out and starring right away on the PGA Tour?
I think we are, because as you pointed out, this hasn't happened in 70-something years. I'm not really good at math, but if I'm figuring it out, that's an amazing stat that you just threw out there. And this goes back to Nick Dunlap, where he did something that no one had done since Phil Mickelson did when Phil Mickelson was an amateur. And so I think we are sort of dismissing the idea of how special this is. And if you asked, probably the best comp is I was texting with a tour player tonight on the flight up, and he was talking, we were having this exact same conversation about 15 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, players who were still amateurs, players who were still in college, didn't show up on the PGA Tour and did this. That's what made what Phil did so special. That's what made what Nick Dunlap did so special. Well, they didn't, by and large, do this. Like, if you look at sort of...
Spieth tied for 16th as a 16-year-old in 2010, Byron Nelson.
16th. I mean, you're talking about back-to-back top 10 finishes. That's a huge difference between that.
Lee McCoy in Tampa finished top five. But I think the point is that they were more kind of hit or miss talents who would come and go. There was not this continued excellence and even an expectation that these guys would play well.
Well, and you had your Tiger Woodses and your Phil Mickelsons, and you can sit and start picking off players. I remember Charles Howell made a splash as an amateur, you know, briefly before he ended up turning pro. Like, there were the sort of the one-offs, but you didn't have this where there was a moment in time, not so much on Sunday, but there was a moment in time when I was watching the tournament on Saturday thinking to myself that, yeah, an amateur could win this event. Like, we could have two in one season. It wasn't out of the realm of possibility until Davis Thompson started pulling away on Sunday. But, man, it's really special. And I think you're absolutely right. I think we do dismiss how difficult this is. I think we do dismiss how fully developed these players are. They show up as fully formed adult men who are ready to compete on the PGA Tour.
I certainly think that's been a large improvement over these past 10 or 15 years, sort of the gap between elite amateur and successful touring pro. I don't think that gap has ever been smaller than it is right now. And you can go into the myriad factors that go into that, whether it's fitness, whether it's nutrition, whether it's the quality of golf courses that colleges are playing. Obviously, equipment plays a huge part in this. And you look at those two players in particular, Luke Clanton and Michael Thorbjornsson. Clanton was top five this past week at the Deer in approach play. Thorbjornsson was top five this week off the tee. Like, these are incredible hitters of the golf ball. From a ball striking standpoint, they're as good as anyone right now, even if they're either making their third career start or a rising junior at Florida State University. I do think, Rex, it goes to show with this increasingly small gap that whatever the future of the PGA Tour is going to look like, whenever this new model comes out for 2026, it has to involve more opportunities for players like Clanton and Thorbjornsson. I don't think there should be like some sort of auto PGA Tour card just because you have a top 10 finish or a top five finish in the PGA Tour. That's not what I'm saying here. But Luke Clanton's amateur record, he is surging up the rankings. He played, he was a contender for the Haskins Award for the top college player. He was on the team that made the finals of the NCAA championship before they lost to Auburn. Like, so you couple his amateur success with what he's already done playing in professional tournaments, like, he can get his PGA Tour card through what is called this accelerated program under PGA Tour, but he's going to have to wait until after his junior season. That's another year from now. So he has to spend another year playing college and amateur golf, playing more tour starts on these sponsor exemptions. Is he ready right now to make the leap? I think only Luke Clanton can answer that. I think Nick Dunlap would have preferred a couple more months of seizing. But any model for what the future is going to look like has to involve a more direct pipeline, not just for the top guys, but I think for three to five of them, because they've shown that they can handle this.
They talked about it on the telecast, and I like PGA Tour U. And look, I don't want to get pulled into this conversation. We'll leave this to Brently Romine and everyone else who follows this much closer than you and I do. But yes, it's serving a purpose, and you're seeing it right now. I guess if I'm going to voice a cautionary tale here, it's going to be Nick Dunlap, because we had a long conversation when he won the American Express about should he, shouldn't he, what's he going to do? You made a very interesting pitch that he should not. Maybe he should go back and play college golf for that one final year and be with his team. I dismissed the idea based on everything we know about the PGA Tour this year, just because of the changes, just because he had an opportunity, a once in a lifetime opportunity, to play in all of the signature events, to play in, I think, three of the four major championships at that time when he won the American Express. So he had everything ahead of him. I still think he made the right decision. However, he has struggled since then. He's not played very well. And I think he is going to be the cautionary tale on this front, because you're right. I think a player can come out and have two or three or four good weeks. That should not get you a PGA Tour card. It should get you an opportunity to get a PGA Tour card. But the tour needs to be careful here. You don't want to start doling them out just because you had a player like what's happened now, where you had back-to-back top 10 finishes. And okay, let's give him a tour card. I don't think that serves anyone. It certainly doesn't serve the player very well, and doesn't serve the membership very well.
I think in time, what's going to be more impactful for the PGA Tour is not actually this PGA Tour University program for the graduating seniors, whether it's Ludvig Åberg, whether it's now Michael Thorbjornsson. I actually think this accelerated program, which doles out PGA Tour cards to a player if they achieve certain benchmarks in their career, and it's based on a point system. You get points for made cuts in the PGA Tour. You get points for becoming world number one, winning important college tournaments, something of that ilk. So, like, you've clearly built up your resume to that point. I think it's going to be very interesting to see if they stick with that junior season, because right now Gordon Sargent is a PGA Tour player. He just so happens to be playing another year of college golf. He already has his PGA Tour card locked up through that accelerated program. Luke Clanton, the way that he's played this summer, coupled again with his amateur success, will be very close to locking that up as well. I just think there's going to be an increased push to potentially put that as a sophomore season, if you can accrue enough points doing what you're supposed to do in college and amateur golf, that sort of validates you as an up-and-coming star who is worthy of consideration on the PGA Tour. Rex, you mentioned that you are in the Delta Sky Lounge. That is because you were heading to Scotland. You will be the Golf Central reporter this week for the Scottish Open, where, yes, a very good field has assembled, although Scottie Scheffler is not in the field. The headliner, of course, is going to be Rory McIlroy, who is making his first start since he did not speak to the media following that crushing runner-up finish at the U.S. Open. You're going to be the reporter, Rex. What do you want to ask him?
Everything we wanted to ask him on Sunday at Pinehurst. And I'll start with the idea.
It's a month later. You're really going to ask him that?
Well, yeah. What were the emotions? I do want to know that. And I guess if you transition from that, was it a learning experience at all? Because he's talked about this before, about the idea that every time he's lost, he's learned something from it. He's gotten better. He's given himself an opportunity. So are you really going to do that this time around? Very nice. I just saw the headline bar go up. That's awesome. Good for you. The idea that every time you've put yourself in this situation where you've suffered this heartbreaking loss and you put yourself out there in front of the world, that you've learned something from it. What did you learn from this particular instance? And look, yes, I still want to know, because we didn't have the opportunity to ask him on Sunday night at Pinehurst. And I guess going forward, I mean, the Open Championship, this is your last chance to get off the major schneid. Is there a sense of urgency now in everything you're going to do building up towards Royal Troon?
Yeah, I think the main question, I think you hit it on the head there, was what could be learned from that Sunday at Pinehurst that can be applied for next time? And keep in mind, he has fared quite well in the Open Championship over the past decade or so, six top six finishes in his last eight Opens. Like, you would think, barring some sort of crazy weather and he gets on the wrong side of the draw, like, that Rory McIlroy should figure prominently in the proceedings in a couple weeks' time at the 156 Open. I also want to know, Rex, was what happened Sunday at Pinehurst more physical or was it more mental? We saw the mistake with some of the drives that he left out there. We saw the mistake with some of his short putting. He hit like the equator of the golf ball on the 72nd hole. Or was that just like the mental wires completely going haywire? Like, was that all of the learnings that he's accrued over the past couple of years with Bob Rotella and staying calm and staying present and focusing on what he needs to do? That like just completely go out the window during that final hour, which was pretty frenetic and some of the best viewing that we've had all year long. Like, those are the two things for me. I'm not sure he would necessarily answer them honestly, but to me, that seemed like a mental breakdown that we really haven't seen of a player of his caliber in a major since, I'm thinking of Spieth,
Phil Wingfoot.
I mean, Spieth in the Masters.
Yeah.
In 2016, I'm thinking DJ 72nd hole at Chambers Bay in the 2015 Open. Mm-hmm.
That green was crazy. I'll give DJ credit on that one. But Spieth was also really, really honest in the aftermath of that. And he told us, like, my arm play is not great this week. And we put him in a situation, or he put himself in a situation on the 12th hole where he just didn't feel comfortable and tried to do something he wasn't capable of doing that particular week.
Rex, how about this line of questioning? Do athletes have a responsibility to talk to the press afterward? Do you think Rory will be asked that by the British press, or will you be the one who asks it?
I won't be the one to ask it, because I think I was pretty clear when we talked about it after whatever happened on Sunday at Pinehurst, where I don't feel like there's an obligation, and I don't expect a player to always sort of acquiesce to our request that there be an interview. However, in that particular situation, and I think Scott Van Pelt on ESPN said it better than anyone else that I heard, that, okay, you don't have to do it, but Phil Mickelson did it when he melted down at Wingfoot. Jordan Spieth did it when he melted down at the Masters. John Vandeveld did it when he melted down at the Open. I can keep going on and on and on, that this is what you do as a professional athlete. I know it's uncomfortable. I know you don't want to answer these questions. I totally understand it. But there was a story to be told there for all the reasons that you just pointed out. Like, I'd love to, it's such a, if you want to try to unlock the mental side of this, and was it physical or was it mental coming down the stretch? Because I would argue, I think most of us would argue, that it was had to be 100% mental, because he was, what, 400, and I keep getting this number wrong, 467 out of 467 from inside 3 feet when it came to those putts. And you missed that one in the most important situation. Was it a misread? Did you hit a spike mark? Like, there's so many things that could have gone wrong in that particular situation. Or did you just feel the pressure of the moment? That's the story that you want to tell on a Sunday night. That's the story that I wanted to write on that Sunday night. So, yes, I don't think there's an obligation. So I'm not going to be asking that question. And I'm a bit of a coward, too. So that's another reason why I'm not going to ask it. But I don't think there's an obligation. We've gone through this. When you get your reign as the Golf Writers Association president, which will be known as the reign of terror for the rest of time, because you're going to be an awful president. I can already see it. You're going to ban all agents from the scrum area, from the interview area, because you don't want them around their players, and you're going to demand that every player answers every question in the interview. I don't believe in that. I believe that at the Olympics, they do it, and I'm going to be there in a couple weeks, and I love the idea that they do this. A player has to walk essentially a real-life gauntlet, like back and forth, and you have to look the interviewer in the eye when they ask you, Rory, can I ask you a question? And you have to tell them no. And you have to keep walking. And that, to me, is probably the best way of doing it. And it seems a little draconian and seems a little harsh, but at least give the interviewer a chance.
If people are a little skittish about what's going to happen in the election come November, I can assure you it will not be as bad as what happens with the Golf Writers Association of America beginning in spring 2029. I still think so. Just a couple of things to button this conversation up. One, I do think there is a responsibility, particularly in this new world order in which everything is going to be turned for a profit or a return on investment, particularly with Rory McIlroy as the face of the PGA Tour for at least probably the next 5 years. I do think there is somewhat of a responsibility there. I do think your solution with the gauntlet type situation where he has to look me in the eye and say, no, I'm not talking today, in which case, okay. And I wish you farewell, good sir. I do think that is probably where we need to go in the future. And finally, about whether this was physical or mental, I still think one of the images of the year when Rory missed that 2.5-footer on the 16th green and it rims out hard, his hand expression to like slow down, like the ball slow down, do not go too far away, is something I don't think I'll ever forget. Like the frailty that showed in the moment, like that this was slipping away from him. I'd love to dig into what that meant, what he was feeling in that moment, even if it is a month removed. I do think there's some answers that we need to get from Rory.
Well, and I love this conversation because I was going to transition and I have to catch a flight, so we can't go too deep on this one. But I can't believe you haven't brought up your boy Jordan Spieth, who made a serious run. On Saturday at the John Deere Classic. And look, the John Deere Classic is his comfort food. That's his blankie. And we all know that that's where Jordan Spieth goes when he needs to play well, when he needs to get a result. And it was coming on Saturday until he got to the 13th hole. And I went and read this interview because I was really, really curious, because he had 109 yards from the middle of the fairway on the 13th hole. And he said it was a bad yardage. And he pulled it way left and made a bogey. And next thing you know, things start going sideways and he doesn't do what he probably thought he was going to end up doing, which was shoot a sub 60 round, because that's where he was heading in that situation. I'm taken by the idea that, okay, it's a bad number, but missing left on that green to that flag is not the answer. The answer is missing it 10 feet or 20 feet short right, and then just two putting for your par and moving on. That to me is shocking, because you have a player of Rory's caliber, which we're talking about what he did at Pinehurst, and now Jordan's caliber doing this when he has an opportunity to put some real pressure and have an opportunity to win for the first time in a really, really long time.
Making a run on Saturday in the Deer. Words that have never been spoken. Instead, he shot a 70 in the final round to Jordan Spieth and finished outside the top 25. Like, we sort of belabored the point on the podcast on Wednesday, diving deep into the state of Jordan Spieth. I'm kind of tired of it at the moment. We have a big enough sample size this season. I'm tired of it this season.
It's your favorite topic. I can't believe it.
But he keeps doing the same thing over and over again, where he drives it well and he's not sharp enough with his iron play or his wedge play to take advantage of it. The 63 was an aberration for how he played for the rest of the week. Like, this is what Jordan Spieth is at the moment. He's the 60th best player on the PGA Tour this season in FedEx Cup. And I don't think it's unrealistic to see him finishing the season that way.
He picked up two strokes on the field approach to the green. So it's not as though he was terrible.
But he was still middle of the pack on a week when the winning score was 28 under par, and there was, 16 guys who finished 20 or deeper under? He's just not sharp enough right now. It's very frustrating.
I clearly aren't in the mood.
No, I'm just a little tired of Jordan. We keep wanting more, and then he keeps disappointing us. I don't think it's unrealistic to want more. Although, watch out for Spieth at the Open Championship. That is the major that he's played the best over the past 6 or 7 years. Rex, you did mention that you're about to catch a flight. This is like what, a 4 or 5 week expedition over to the UK? How do you even like pack for that? What's the deal?
Very good, Bond. And that's impressive. It's 5 weeks. It's interesting that you would ask that. So I have done the ultimate hack, and we'll actually have a fun 5 weeks finding out if it works. So all I brought was a carry-on. It's right here next to me. You can see it right here. And my golf clubs, because I'm not an animal and I'm going to play golf during the Scottish Open, because that's what you do. However, I did the hack that I shipped all my suits up to Connecticut for the Open Championship, because you and I have to wear suits when we're on TV. So that's pretty much the uniform of the day. And they will ship them back when I'm done with them that week.
So you have shipping people.
Well, you and I both have shipping people.
And I'm sure you're not flying 38B into Edinburgh, are you?
No, I believe it's 5B, if you want to be honest.
Just a real man of the people flying business class. And he has shipping people for all of his suits because he's on television.
Flying over to Royal Troon there, tough guy. Take it easy.
I think it's 3A. This is not about me. How did you spend your last couple days in America before you set sail for 5 weeks?
It was magical. Bunkmate and my oldest son have been in Scotland for the last week, and so she will meet me at the airport tomorrow morning when I land. My oldest son will be flying home tomorrow, so we'll be able to see each other quickly. I'll hug him. He'll get on a plane. He'll fly home. And then me, bunkmate, super producer Andrew Bradley, we'll all join up and we'll drive over to Gullen, essentially, together for the week at the Scottish Open. There is going to be some golf. I've already arranged that. I have North Berwick in the morning, which is going to be fantastic after we get off the plane. And then I think we have Muirfield on Wednesday afternoon. So, yeah, good stuff.
Oh, wow. Yes, North Berwick, my favorite course I've ever played.
Jason, my man, you hooked me up. He brought it correct. Tyler's fitting last week at Ponte Vedra Inn and Club. It was fantastic. He was perfect.
Yes, folks, that's right. Rex has a personal club fitter to go along with his shipping person, as well as his travel agent to get business class. Oh, yes. Just a real man of people, that Rex Hoggard. We'll be back on Wednesday for any news, wink, wink, that might happen over the next couple of days in the world of golf, as well as a full preview of the Scottish Open. Well, Rex, again, will be the Golf Central reporter. Everyone wish Rex some safe travels. Thanks, as always, for listening. Thanks for the support. NBCSports.com/golf in the interim. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Have a great start to your work week.
Jason, you're the man.